Blog Talk Radio.
I guess that's not going to work then, huh?
Hello.
Al Simaglia.
Hey. What's up, big boy?
All right, we're live. We're starting off the way we ended, I think, last time. welcome, everyone, to the titillation has been replaced now. The Third Man In Radio, Puck Shatter Radio, is back here on this Thursday night, March the 5th, 2014. 7:30 in Chicago. Al Simaglia, Sirius XM Radio. How you doing?
I'm doing good, but it's 2015, but don't sweat the small details.
I'd like a do-over anyway. It's all right. how you doing? It's been, you know what, Al? It's been so long since we've spoken.
I can't remember the last time.
It was 6 months
ago. I thought I did something.
You may have. I probably forgot. in these past 6 months, there's a lot to cover, but for various reasons, we're not going to cover all of it tonight. But we're going to cover some of it. Obviously, the trade deadline has just passed. We have to talk about that. Patrick Kane injured. Stan Bowman, who has an eternal golden horseshoe up his backside, was able to make some moves that he wouldn't have previous to that injury. We'll talk about those. The Blackhawks still in line for perhaps one last run at it with this core and some other things. I also, for those of you listening, I got some audio at the end of the show. One of the things, and not to start out on a somber note, but while I have it on my mind, I just uploaded the audio. Last month, Steve Montador passed away. And I got to know Steve a little bit in covering him in Rockford, and a great guy. And the last interview that I did with him that I recorded and everything, it's about a 10-minute interview. It touches a lot of bases. It was actually done the same day the Blackhawks placed him on waivers. It was at the 2013 trade deadline. So you get it's an interesting it was an interesting day, and he had a lot of interesting things to say. I'm going to play that at the end of the show here. So 10 minutes at the end of the show whenever we wrap up, and we'll do about an hour or so tonight, Al and I. But it's I didn't know how I'd feel about it, Al, when I listened to it just about a half hour ago. But it's good. I think I can't claim to know him personally. He wasn't a friend, per se. I wouldn't call him that, but, it was someone I got to know a little bit, and a great guy, and, really sad when anytime someone's younger than you and they pass away, it's an awfully gutting feeling.
Yeah, that's been happening too much. It seems another younger guy, and by all accounts, a really good guy. So it's a big loss, no doubt. And his family, I mean, right before his daughter was born, and just you just don't know what to say, and you just wonder how much of a toll possibly the headshots take on these guys, and maybe they had nothing to do with anything. I don't know if the final results are in as far as what may have caused his death, and to some extent it doesn't really matter. A young person is gone that was just going to be a father a few days after he died, and it's all bad anyway, but it leaves a lot of questions open, I guess. And I don't know if you've heard about if there's been toxicology report or anything like that, but by all accounts, there wasn't any foul play. So it's just a sad passing.
No, the last time I checked on it, Al, was, I want to say, last Friday. And I guess it was imminent. But I didn't check this week, so I don't know. Moving along, we should do, and I was thinking about this earlier today. I used to joke when I did these. I don't even know if I introduced myself. People would probably forgot. I'm Chris Block, writer, editor, and keeper of thethirdmanin.com. Later on this month, and, you know, I'd like to do another one of these in a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, so we could talk about Tim Sassone, because that unfortunate anniversary is coming up at the end of the month. And I would like to take time. We're not going to have time to really do it tonight, but I would like to do that maybe in a couple of weeks with you if you're up for it.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. I think that would be fitting. I know that, you know, people like you in your age group really probably were drawn to the Blackhawks by reading Tim. And, that would be worthwhile doing, and I'd like to take part in that if at all possible.
All right. Let's kind of get on with it. I want to touch kind of all corners here tonight. Like I said, we're going to focus on, you know, what the Blackhawks have been doing and the trades and moving forward. There's 18 games left in the season now. The Blackhawks are kind of stuck in this spot where, first of all, if you really look at the schedule, the Blackhawks, it's not really set in stone that they're going to finish where they are, which is currently a little bit behind St. Louis. Unless St. Louis really hits a rut, it doesn't look like the Blackhawks can catch St. Louis. But the Blackhawks have 18 games remaining. 8 of them are at home, 10 on the road. But their next two are at home. So 10 of their final 16 are on the road. That's a challenge. That's not going to be a cakewalk for the Blackhawks. The good thing for the Hawks, though, is that they are firmly supplanted in third place. 4 points, like I said, behind St. Louis. 5 points up on Winnipeg. And 6 points up on Minnesota. I think Minnesota has a game in hand. But St. Louis is playing right now. I don't have the scoreboard in front of me. And then the big game.
They're winning 1-0. They're winning 1-0 after the second period.
All right. The big game of the weekend to watch, if you're really into hockey and watching good hockey, is on Saturday night in Nashville. Winnipeg will be at Bridgestone Arena. So that should be a good one to watch and see if Winnipeg, if they can beat Nashville there and get, you know, Winnipeg can get on a roll. Maybe that's a team the Blackhawks have to look out for. But I guess, first of all, overall with the team, we'll get into the, it'll bridge into the discussions about the trades and stuff. But, I mean, how does this set up right now for the Blackhawks of the way you're looking at it?
Well, I think, you know, and it's changed a little bit over the last week or so, 10 days. You know, I think realistically, St. Louis may have a better chance of catching Nashville than the Hawks have of catching whoever's in second place. And that would be interesting, because if that happens, then the Hawks play Nashville, if they stay where they're at, which, you know, I'm thinking that's probably going to happen. It's hard to make up a lot of ground, and I didn't really dissect the schedule. Maybe you have, as far as games against the teams right in front of them. But as far as I'm concerned, whether the Blues win their first round or not, you know, there's two teams the Hawks should avoid, in my opinion. The first one would be St. Louis, and the second one, or 1A, 1B, is Los Angeles. Los Angeles has proven that they seem to get the breaks when they play the Blackhawks, and they find ways to beat them. You know, they did last year. And when I watch the Kings play the Hawks, sometimes it reminds me of the Hawks playing other teams in the playoffs in the last few years. Detroit comes to mind. You know, when the Hawks play the Kings, the Hawks hit the post, the Kings bounce one in off of someone's behind, and it goes in. They seem to have, you know, the poison pill against the Hawks for whatever reason. They've been lucky lately. And the Blues are the dream busters, I think. I think you want to, if possible, you'd like to avoid playing the Blues, especially in the first round, because that hasn't turned out too well for anyone that has recently. as far as lasting throughout the playoffs. It's not that they beat them in the first round, but, you know, it takes a toll later is what I mean.
Yeah, you know, and it's also looking like there's going to be a crossover team, whether it's Winnipeg or Minnesota, that goes into the West, into the Pacific. Because and that Pacific looks really weird today. I wonder, because right now it's Anaheim, you know, which is statistically the best team in the West right now. I think everybody kind of has their doubts about Anaheim. But behind them right now, if the playoffs were to begin today, it would be Vancouver and Calgary. Now, Vancouver, I don't know how you expect them or anybody would expect them to hold on to a playoff spot. I mean, if you watch those games, you know, God love Ryan Stanton and Adam Clendenning, but, I mean, that defense is a mess. And Ryan Miller's out. I mean, their last two games, they've pulled goalies after giving up three goals on four shots, you know. So, I mean, how do they keep that? Calgary lost their best player. So you've got L.A., who I think everybody figures will get in there somehow. And then maybe even San Jose finds a way if they get – they got to get on quite a roll, though. And then there's one of the teams from the Central crossover. I think the Hawks can get on a roll. I do believe – and I was talking to somebody about this a couple of weeks ago, or I think it was even – it was right before the trade deadline, and we were talking about the St. Louis Blues. And as much as I like that team – and obviously Tarasenko gives them a boost. If the Blackhawks play a healthy St. Louis Blues team, it'll be a completely different team than they played in the playoffs last year. But I still think with them, even more so, much more so than it was last year, it comes down to goaltending with the Blues, and I just don't think they have it. But I do believe that I would feel better from a Blackhawks perspective in that series if they had home ice. I know that it, you know, people don't think that it, you know, it really matters. But I think it does because the Blackhawks – I've talked before in the past about the – you know, really since 2009, the Blackhawks haven't played well in a first round of a series. But it's different this time because they know that they don't have Patrick Kane and their backs are kind of up against the wall. There'll be a more of a sense of urgency. I don't think that they'll have that flat first round, but it's going to be important against the Blues, I think, to have home ice. So if the Blackhawks can slide up there – I think I give them a better shot of getting out of that first round, even though I still, like I said, I don't believe in the Blues just from the standpoint of goaltending. A lot of people thought that or blamed last year on Ryan Miller. I mean, three of their best players are, you know, they're hurt. They're playing like really badly hurt. And, you know, Backes probably shouldn't even have come back in that series at all. And Ryan Miller held him in it. I mean, there's two bad goals that you could think of in that series that probably shouldn't have gone in. But those were two goals. I mean, the Blackhawks won that series last year because St. Louis was a walking wounded. I think this year the Blackhawks win that series because St. Louis goaltending's for, you know, nothing to speak of.
Yeah, I think that's their Achilles heel. And, you know, it's funny when you look at the schedule for the rest of March. Now, if Patrick Kane were healthy, you'd have to think the Hawks have a good chance of winning 9 of the next 12 games. Rangers, Coyotes, Sharks, Islanders, Rangers, Stars, Hurricanes, Flyers, Blue Jackets, Jets, and Kings. But, you know, how they're going to play without him still remains to be seen. I think Stan Bowman did what he could do without taking on any term. And to be, in my view, I think he did exactly... He plugged the holes that were needed, even if Kane were here, and he wouldn't have been able to do it if Kane were healthy, but he needed to get bigger down the middle. He needed to get some size. He needed to get an experienced player in. You know, I think, you know, it's no secret, Brad Richards, you know, he's running on fumes some nights, and some nights he looks okay, and then other nights he doesn't, and you just couldn't take that chance. I think the bottom six were... You know, there was basically the forecheck was really inconsistent, you know, out to lunch for the most part since the beginning of the year. So, you know, he got a bigger center. He got someone that could win faceoffs in Vermette. He has a seasoned guy who plays up and down the ice and should be a Quenneville type of player and could could be used to kind of spell Taves maybe on some of these faceoffs too, where he doesn't have to be trotted out there every time. So that won't hurt, and he could be useful a number of ways. And then Desjardins, I mean, he's not, you know, he's not going to dazzle you, but he's more of a gritty guy, but he's a bigger body. And I think Ben Smith was a nice player, and I think he improved in a lot of respects, and he does whatever he can, and he's an NHL player to some extent, but here he's, you know, he's basically like some of the other players. He's a nice player, and he's small. And I think, you know, it's very difficult to be able to bring a fierce forecheck and throw your weight around when you're hitting these bigger players and trying to do it game after game for months and months at a time. And, you know, basically the physicality of his game, it wasn't there. You know, people, you know, get upset with Bickle and Shaw. I think, you know, once Shaw plays on the wing, he could get in on the forecheck and, you know, he could throw his weight around. And for his size, he does. He's a much more physical player than Smith, and I think the Hawks need a little bit more physicality. I don't know if Nordstrom's the answer. I don't know where TT fits, Teravainen fits in, Teravainen rather, and I'm not sure yet. I mean, a few weeks ago, Quenneville said he wasn't a bottom six player, and now he's a bottom six player, so I don't know how that's going to shake out either. But I think, you know, they need to get a strong forecheck and have the third and fourth lines being useful, you know, and eating up some minutes. And so I think he did what he did. And I think Timonen, you know, he's got a lot of skill, very good player in his day. Kind of a lotto ticket now from the standpoint he hasn't played for a year. You know, worked out hard for a long time to get to this point to have another chance at the Stanley Cup. And, you know, he may very well be, you know, their fourth best defenseman. Oduya's been, you know, spotty this year. So I guess from that standpoint, you know, Bowman took a chance with him. He didn't get into a bidding war on some of the other guys, or maybe he did and missed out on it to start with. There were a couple others that may have been as good or better, maybe a little bit less risky than Timonen. But he did what he could do. So we'll see how it all shakes out, you know, going down the stretch here and in the playoffs.
Yeah, let's talk about those trades. And I think that Stan Bowman did exactly what he could do and exactly what he had to do at the trade deadline. You first, I think, kind of referenced the Ben Smith trade. Ben Smith going to San Jose for Andrew Desjardins. A conditional seventh-round pick also going to San Jose, which I think has kind of blurred or got this trade kind of out of focus, I think, from a fan perspective, because that seventh-round pick really went to San Jose because San Jose chose to eat half of Desjardins' contract. And the point of this deal, you know, I think there's an outside chance that Desjardins plays, like, you know, left wing or something in the St. Louis series maybe. But you're going to see him play. Because they traded for him, they're going to throw him out there to say, let's see what you can do. And you know what? In the first game or two, fans are going to be looking for that one thing that he does good, and they're gonna focus in on that. And then three or four games into it, people are going to be like, well, Jesus Christ, this guy can't play. And then you won't see him again. And that's my prediction, because I've watched him play before. But the Ben Smith trade was done specifically to create the cap space that for when Johnny Oduya comes off long-term IR, that Teuvo Teravainen can stay on the roster. So
it's like, about $750,000 or so, isn't it?
Well,
$700,000,
yeah.
Something like
the
that.
The difference between Smith and Desjardins' contract is $750,000, but then Doug Wilson ate half of that $750,000, or what's left of the $750,000, and that's what created additional room. So let's kind of try to give clarity to why that deal was made. If Desjardins ends up playing and helping, then great. But the real idea behind that trade was to get Teravainen on the roster now. I know a lot of people have said, well, or at least they've read, where people have said, oh, well, they've got to start clearing cap space for next year. Yeah, I mean, it in a way it does that, and I've written about that before where I think that next year it was going to be too easy to trade Ben Smith and move like a Mark McNeil into that spot, or maybe a Ryan Hartman. But I mean, that we're not worried. Stan Bowman, when when Patrick Kane got injured, no one was talking about 2015-16 inside the Blackhawks front office. They were talking about how do we salvage this now? Because as we talked about before the season, Al and I in the last show, this is it for this group. You know, that core, so to speak, you know, this is the run. I mean, you don't do it this year, and who knows when the next time you're going to be primed and ready to do it, because you've got Taves and Kane contract, you've got Tor Corey Crawford making $6 million, you got Brandon Saad making four, maybe even more. So the time is now. But that was why that deal was made. The big deal that the Blackhawks made, and as much as the defense needed to be improved, once Patrick Kane went down, this trade was essential. And the Blackhawks trade their first-round draft pick in this upcoming summer's draft, which is taking place in Florida, in Sunrise, Florida, their first-round draft pick and Klaus Dahlbeck for Antoine Vermette. To me, once Kane went down, that was essential because – I mean, you heard like the scuttlebutt of, like, about Cam Atkinson, maybe. What people don't understand is, like, when Patrick Kane gets injured, you don't replace Patrick Kane with, you know, an ordinary right winger. You have to replace Patrick Kane with somebody who can distribute the puck or get the puck back, and you know, and that's something that Antoine Vermette can do. And that's not something, as far as getting the puck back, that Brad Richards can do. And that was essential. But the only reason why that happened was because Patrick Kane got injured. And then I'll open the floor to you, Al. But before we go there, Kimmo Tiiminen, which I think would have happened probably no matter what, Kimmo Tiiminen to the Flyers for the Blackhawks' second-round draft pick and a conditional in 2016, which is essentially – if the Blackhawks, I think, get into the conference finals, it basically is a pick that graduates, or it locks in and then graduates based on how far the Blackhawks go and if Tiiminen's playing.
Yeah. And I think the way I looked at it was there were three needs. You needed a bottom six player, not in the order of precedence, but I'm saying you needed a bottom six player, someone who could forecheck and had some size, and we'll see if that guy's Desjardins or you know, maybe it turns out to be Nordstrom. So, but I think they needed that, and they also needed someone who could move the puck and pass from the back end and play decent defense. So that should be teaming in if we could play, you know, and it remains to be seen. I mean, not playing in a year, 40 years old, who knows, but worth taking a chance. And then Vermette was the best player available with no term on his contract as far as a forward goes, because he's the most versatile. And he's a bigger center, and the Hawks basically have been a center short one way or the other. Either Brad Richards is not playing well, or, you know, Andrew Shaw is bouncing up and back and forth, but they could use another center. So, like I say, in the world of no salary cap, I think Bowman would have been looking and targeting those type of players, even if Kane was healthy. But he wouldn't have been able to get them all. And I think you're right. The one player he would have gotten would have been Tiiminen. And it seems that way, if you could believe what was said. They were working on that trade for a couple, 3 weeks. So that seems like there was foundation laid with that. And Vermette, I don't think he had a choice. It must have been like nails on a chalkboard for Stan Bowman that he gave up a first-round pick and an ice hog, something that he's been reluctant to do. But he really had no choice because, the one thing that stood out when they got Brad Richards, and I'm not saying it was a bad deal for $2 million and that he's played horribly, but, you know, the fact of the matter is that he played a long, long season last year, and, you know, he's not any younger. And to me, I watch him, and he takes a lot of shortcuts. You know, I don't know if it's just because of when he plays with Kane or what, but, you know, he doesn't do little things. He doesn't drive to the net. He doesn't open up any space. He waits to get the puck back. And he's a smart player that could deliver some nice passes from time to time, no doubt. But he's not really he's not really the type of player that's making anyone else better around him on a consistent basis that I see. So maybe he could be plugged in here or there in the playoffs, but I think Joel Quenneville has, what, 18 games left, you said? And he's going to have something shake out, because right now, the way they've played since the turn of the calendar, right now they're playing like a team that's going to be out in the first round. But we still have quite a bit to go. Those games don't matter anymore, and now there's some new blood in the lineup, and we'll see what happens. I think this month, like I said, when you look at the schedule this month, if they put their head down and they can play well, and they played a simple game the other night, granted, the Hurricanes, they were nowhere to be found. But they played a simple game. If they could play a simple game, you know, mostly north and south, and take care of their own zone, they have a good chance to, you know, to win 80% of these games, 75-80%. You know, and if they do that, they could put themselves in as good of a position as they could be in for the playoffs. And who knows? Maybe Nashville comes back down to earth, and St. Louis does what they didn't do last year and finishes well, and maybe St. Louis wins the division.
Yeah, I think there's some ground here we need to cover with the Blackhawks roster, because, I mean, first of all, there's some ramifications that also went down at the trade deadline, and one of the things that I wrote about the other day is the ramifications to the Rockford IceHogs. You mentioned, and we mentioned, Klaus Dahlbeck being traded away. The Blackhawks also traded prior to the deadline. They traded T.J. Brennan, the offensive-minded defenseman who was acquired in the Nick Leddy deal. It was a throw-in. The Blackhawks had to take him, because when Nick Leddy went to the Islanders, there was no room for T.J. Brennan, and T.J. Brennan got a guaranteed one-way contract. The Islanders weren't very high on paying T.J. Brennan $600,000 to play in Bridgeport, so the Blackhawks had to take that contract off their hands. They got rid of that contract, sending T.J. Brennan back to Toronto. They got a scoring winger that hopefully that'll help them, Spencer Abbott. But one of the things that happened at the trade deadline, and I know that you know this, Al, but let's talk about it here for a second. The Blackhawks made some decisions, and I think they've kind of flown under the radar, but they made some big decisions. The decision was made that Scott Darling is now the Blackhawks' backup, and that's not going to change. Antti Raanta was sent to Rockford, and Scott Darling's not going back to Rockford. I mean, unless there's some sort of, you know, major change in philosophies or decision-making, Scott Darling's not going back to Rockford. The Blackhawks, one of the things that NHL teams do at the trade deadline, and it's mostly teams that are out of the playoffs, is they send certain players that, you know, have been playing, you know, either most of the season or off and on, have been playing in the minors at the trade deadline. If whatever NHL players, if there's a player playing in the NHL, if he's not on the AHL team's roster at 2 p.m. this past Monday at the trade deadline, if he's not on the roster at that moment, he then becomes ineligible to play in the AHL playoffs. So what teams do is they make paper transactions where they file paperwork with the league where they reassign that player to the AHL team. But then once the 2 p.m. deadline passes, they immediately file paperwork to have that player called up. The player goes nowhere. It just gets him to qualify for the AHL playoffs. The Blackhawks have done that before with other players, Brandon Bolig being the year they won the Cup in 2013 being the primary example, most recent example. Well, the Blackhawks made no paper transactions. They didn't send Scott Darling down and then call him right back up. They didn't do it with Teuvo or Joakim Nordstrom. So those three players are here to stay. And my question now is to you, and maybe it doesn't mean anything, but Teuvo Teravainen isn't sticking around. You know, he's not still on the Blackhawks because he has to drive Kimmo Timonen around. The hotel that Kimmo Timonen's staying up off North Michigan Avenue is a very nice hotel. They have complimentary car service. He doesn't need a driver. Teuvo's staying there too. But that's not why he's around. He's obviously going to play. Joakim Nordstrom's obviously going to play. Desjardins going to get in there. What is Dan Carcillo's role on this team now, Al?
Well, he's gonna pl- he's just gonna be here, and then he'll be gone, and he won't be heard from again. And I don't know, you know, if he'll be heard from again on another NHL team. This may be it for him. Getting back to a point you made, though, I was kind of surprised that they didn't do the paper transaction with Teravainen. I would have thought that they would have done that. You know, and I guess maybe, now maybe I put too much emphasis in it, and you're certainly a better authority on it. I thought it was important, you know, for Rockford to have a decent run in the playoffs and have, you know, and have these guys get some winning playoff experience. And Teravainen would, you know, he would really, obviously, he would help them a great deal, I would think. And but now maybe they're so depleted, they lost Clendenning, they lost Brennan, you know, maybe Dahlbeck, maybe that's just out the window now, and it is what it is, and, you know, it was a necessity. But I would have thought they would have done the paper transaction with him just in case they didn't want him to play the last few weeks of the season, or, you know, if they were to send him down for some playoff games or whatever. I don't know. You know, there's a lot of contradictions here with what's being said. I mean, Quenneville definitely seemed like, you know, his play, Teravainen's place was as a top six player. Now, maybe that still turns out that way. Maybe Vermette goes to the third line, or maybe they keep Teravainen on the wing. But I don't know if he's, you know, if he has much of a future here this season, going down the stretch in the playoffs playing wing. Maybe he does. Maybe he does. I just think that he's better in the middle of the ice. He doesn't get knocked around as much. So, I don't know. That's just my personal opinion. I was kind of surprised they didn't do that with him. As far as Raanta goes, they like the other guy better. That seems to be the deal. And, you know, I would think something would be done this summer with Raanta. I wasn't all on board with him getting traded at the deadline, because I think you could get more for him maybe in the summer. And except for Edmonton, I don't know, you know, if it was part of a Petrie trade, I don't know how he fit really someplace else. Although now there's been goaltenders that have been injured. You know, Luongo and the Panthers have two of them out at the same time. But in any regard, so it seems like Rockford is kind of stuck at a deficit because of what's happened here too. And we'll see how much confidence Quenneville has in playing Teravainen, you know, even at a wing on the third, fourth line, wherever he ends up. And so, like I say, I think there's some questions that need 5 weeks or so.
All right, hold on a sec. See, this is why, and people wonder why we haven't done a show in 6 months. This is why. Hold on. Oh. Calling
Hello?
I don't know what happened there. See, this is why.
Where did I cut out? I was on a ramble there, on a Rockford Ice Hog, Teravainen ramble. Where was I?
I didn't. I don't know. I didn't hear any of it. But I was on a ramble, and then I kicked it to you, and then I got lost.
Just briefly, because I don't know what, you know, went out. But I was kind of surprised they didn't do the paper transaction you were talking about with Teravainen, because I thought maybe he would be able to play some games down there in the playoffs, but I guess as it turns out, when you look at what's gone on, they've lost Clendenning, Brennan, Dahlbeck. You know, I think maybe it is what it is down there. I thought that it was very important for them to have a long playoff run, but by necessity, players had to go. And now Teravainen's up here, and like you said, maybe the plans are just to see where he fits in up here, and I don't have an idea where he's going to fit in. I think he's better off at center. But don't know if that's, you know, that's in the cards either. I think he gets knocked around and can distribute the puck, and he sees the ice well. I would think you would want to try to put him at center, but maybe there's no room. Although maybe he could play center, and maybe Vermette comes down and plays third line center. I don't know. There's still questions that need to be answered here with the remaining 5 weeks of the season, or 4 weeks.
You know, it's not irrelevant, because I mean it speaks to the way they handled this roster, and it's not it's not a Joel Quenneville thing solely, but it speaks to the way they handle this roster. Because, again, if Kane doesn't get injured, there's no Antoine Vermette here. But you still have an issue at center. And when we talked in the summer about Brad Richards coming in, what did we talk about? We talked about, okay, for $2 million, I mean, how do you pass that up? You got a guy, a former Conn Smythe. You know, it's a guy that if you pace him, you know, it should work out, but you understand that he'll fade if you push him too hard. So you had this kid in Teravainen who you know, I mean, you're going to make him earn it, and you don't want to push him too hard in the beginning. I get all that. But the idea was that you bring Teravainen along so when you get to this point, he's ready to at least eat some minutes at that center position and help you out and cover for a fading Richards. But they didn't do that. They walked right. I mean, it's not lucky that you lose Patrick Kane, and God forbid the Blackhawks win the first two rounds. Kane comes back in the conference finals and they lose the summer that we're going to have to endure of the uninformed fan wanting to trade Patrick Kane because he's the reason why the Hawks, you know, didn't, you know. But, I mean, just get ready for that. If that's the way it goes down, that's what you're going to hear if you listen to Sports Talk Radio, which I don't. And that's one of the reasons why. But God forbid that happens. But if Kane doesn't get hurt, then you have this huge issue at center that you've never even tried to solve. And getting back to, you know, I want to address this because people talk about the Stan Bowman, Joel Quenneville dynamic, and is there a conflict? Is there a disconnect? Is there discord? And all those things. First and foremost, Stan Bowman's job as a general manager is to formulate the roster. He's the one that's there making decisions. Maybe that's the Blackhawks on the line right there. But he's the one making decisions about the roster and all of that. Joel Quenneville coaches. Now, of course, Joel Quenneville is going to be a Hall of Fame coach. He's earned the right to have input and direction as far as the roster goes. But if there is an issue there between those two, and if there is an issue between who's playing and who's not, who gets put where and who doesn't get put where, Joel Quenneville not trusting young players and Stan having to send them back to Rockford because Joel won't play them, if that is true, which I don't know for sure that it is, but if it is true, Stan Bowman doesn't have a Joel Quenneville problem. Stan Bowman has an Al McIsaac, Stan Bowman, and Rocky Wirtz problem. That's the fact. Because if the general manager doesn't have the ability to walk downstairs and say, Joel, I respect your opinion, but this is what we're doing. This is the guy who's going to be on the roster. If he doesn't have the power to do that, his issue isn't with Joel Quenneville. His issue is with his bosses. And I'm just tired of that whole BS argument, or you know that whole conversation about discord and all that, because that's the reality. If there is discord, whatever. But the reality is that the issue isn't between those two. If there is an issue, the issue is that Joel has clout over Stan, which is an upper management issue.
Well, I think that the lines of separation throughout the NHL when it comes to GM and coach have been pretty steadfast until recently, and now it's changing. And interestingly enough, this team seems to be the first team that had success that always credited like a team, a front office team effort. Maybe that's because Scotty Bowman has his hands in there as a consultant. You know, you have the executive assistant that reports to the president, Al McIsaac, who's a sharp hockey guy also, and it's just the way it was blended together. Okay. That said, you do not have a Joel Quenneville as a head coach if you don't let him have complete control over the roster, and he's a strong personality. That isn't the type of guy you tell, for the most part, who's going to play and who isn't. Now, getting back to your point, by design, it seemed to me that the time to put Teravainen in here and get him acclimated was in January when the wheels started coming off, and expose him then. And that didn't really happen. So you could question the plan and the design from the beginning, because I think a prudent mind would say that Tara Vinen probably deserved a look to get his feet wet and to possibly be a useful player come down the stretcher in the playoffs. He needed to play, and he needed to play after the holidays to get here and start to play. And that really wasn't the case. It really wasn't the case for the most part. I think, I don't know exactly when he came, I could look, but I think it was probably the later part of January, where he was on some sort of a consistent run and playing, but he was on a short leash, and I think so. That was kind of odd to begin with, but it's an interesting dynamic from the standpoint here that you have such a strong, seasoned head coach, and a GM that's pretty much just the opposite. So I think at some point, though, Stan Bowman has to control who's on the roster. I'm just looking here. Tara Vinen did come up January 4th, 6th, 9th, 11th, 16th, 18th, 20th. So I'm wrong. So he was playing.
He got the call when Versteeg got injured.
Well, that's right. Okay, that's what I forgot. He got the call when Versteeg was injured, but would he have been here without that? I don't know. But he was here. Okay, so he played through January, and then in February until the beginning of February, and then kind of disappeared for a couple weeks and came back February 26th. So I don't know if he was exposed enough in that time to really get his feet wet, but maybe he was. But I would have thought there would have been some sort of master plan, some plan by design that would have said, this is a kid that we may need down the stretch because Brad Richards is older than Methuselah and he'll be running on fumes. I don't know if that all worked out, if it just kind of fell into place with the injuries that, you know, he was up here. So it kind of seemed weird to begin with. I don't think Stan Bowman can't be given a pass on all this stuff. I mean, if you look what happened in the summer, if you want to go back to that, and I don't want to keep dwelling on it, but, you know, too many times players were here where he was forced into trades and gave them away. And, you know, it's very difficult to pick the right players in a draft. It's not easy to do. You're dealing with young kids. It's a bit of a guessing game. I give him credit for quite a few of the draft picks. Some of them seem to fall into his lap, but still, credit is due. He didn't pass like a player like Saad, who was, you know, in the top five or so there for a while and fell to him. Nor did he pass Tara Vinen. Credit due. But what's very difficult is to get the timeline, to get everything in order. And you really can't, I mean, this is a different circumstance because the core is young. They all got good at one time. You've got a strong group of, in essence, younger players. But it isn't smart business to give away players that were developed in Rockford that you've wasted 2 or 3 years on, you know, to give away a Stanton, to go, you know, to get forced into a corner to trade Peary. Dylan Olsen, you could say the same thing, overhyped for how long and then traded. Morin had to be traded. He wouldn't have cleared waivers when Sharp came back. I think he's finally turned because the Clendenning trade was ahead of the curve. You know, I would have thought he would have kept him to be used as a chip in, you know, for the trade deadline, but they must have liked the young prospect they got from Vancouver, Forsling. And when you look at how everything shook out here since the purge in 2010 in the summer, the only two players that have net been here, young players that are basically from that purge that were acquisitions, is Philip Deneau and Forsling, which really isn't enough for trading 10 players, but that's how 9 or 10 guys had to go. But that's really how it's turned out. You know, the Morins are gone and Peary's gone, and although Peary was in a different case, but you understand what I'm saying. That at some point comes back to bite you. And, you know, I think right now where I was questioning what he would do with the trade deadline is how many Icehawks could he trade? Because now, you know, some of these guys, they're at the point where you need them to step in. I'm not saying there's 6 or 8 of them are going to come up at once, but you need the younger guys with their controlled salaries to be here, because like you made reference to in the beginning, there's going to be some cap constraints that have to be dealt with next year. So I don't know, you know, there's always a finger point, and it seems like the people that blame Quenneville will blame Quenneville forever, and at some point maybe he'll go and you get criticized, and maybe he does ride these players too much, and, you know, he doesn't ration any time, really. He's got his pedal down, the pedals down from the opening month on. That's the way he is. He's not Mike Babcock. He's not, you know, he's not Daryl Sutter. He's not that way. So that's just the way he is. And when he goes, if he ever has to go, not on his own accord, the people that have been saying, I told you so, they're going to say, I told you so again, because that's going to be one of the reasons pointed to for his departure. He burns players out, doesn't trust the younger players. But in the same regard, the GM has to be, he has to be the maestro. He has to be the one who's the band leader with this stuff. And it seems like between the two of them, it's just disjointed. And I'll let you comment, because I'm rambling here a bit. But it's the same thing with the Teravainen comment of a few weeks ago when he said, well, he's not a bottom six player. I was caught off guard with that comment, because I thought it was kind of telling that he would even say something so frank. Because I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe he doesn't fit in the top six here. So my thinking was he wasn't going to be here. You know, maybe that was a signal that he was kind of sending a message to Stan Bowman that, you know, this guy is not what I need. He better go back to Rockford. Well, that seemed to happen for a little bit, but then he's back, and now you just wonder if they're going to try to play him in the lineup, even in the bottom six, and if that's something that he could grab a hold of and be useful.
To me, that Quenneville comment about not a bottom six player was, I just think it was a flippant, off-the-cuff comment he made, and, you know, about, you know, Teravainen and whether or not he was going to play or not, or what his position was, because, like you said, I agree with you. I think that he was just basically trying to say that he didn't want to play Teravainen at that moment in time. And because, I mean, as we all know, it's, you know, I've kind of talked about it a lot, but what are we really talking? I mean, the bottom six, the third line, which is a part of the bottom six, is a strictly possession orientated line. That's why Quenneville gets so aggravated so quickly with that third line, is because that third line's job, all that is to possess the puck, create scoring chances, and keep the momentum going. They don't get checking assignments, and they don't get checked. So that's why Quenneville gets so aggravated with that line when they're not on they're not in the other team's zone, a positive percentage of the time, because that's all that team has, and it's usually a line that's got some good skill on it. So that line, that third line, is the perfect place for Teuvo Teravainen. So that's why I heard Joe say that, and I know a lot of people have harped on it, but I don't think that he gave any thought to that at all, because it doesn't make any sense. He knows what his third line is, and Teuvo, if he's going to go anywhere, it should be on that third line. So I think it was something like you kind of alluded to, him trying to send a message to Joel. I want to get back, though, about the point about Stan, and I think this is a year, I think, that you pointed out with the Adam Clendenin and Gustav Forsling trade, that maybe Stan, as a general manager, is starting to turn a corner, because it's well documented that, you know, I don't think it was his decision to wait until the last minute to trade Nick Leddy, but he did wait to the last minute to trade Nick Leddy. For over a year, we knew that the organization and Joel Quenneville didn't like Jeremy Morin, but he waited until the last possible minute to trade Jeremy Morin, and he got nothing in return. Now, you can look at it in hindsight and say, well, Morin went to Columbus and he hasn't done anything, and now he's got a heart condition, he's not even playing. That's not the point. The point is that at one point, as a general manager, you had an asset that other people and other teams would have been interested in, and you could have sold at a higher price than frickin' Tim Erickson. But you didn't, because you held on to him to the last second. You knew he was never going to fit. You knew the coach was never going to play him, but you held on to him. Why? Why did you do that? Brandon Peary, you knew the coach didn't like him, but you held on to him until the kid got so fed up that he demanded, well, he requested a trade. I mean, a guy in Rockford can't really demand a trade, but he requested a trade. And, you know, Dylan Olsen, there were issues with Dylan Olsen in Rockford and for, you know, different things. Not, you know, that he was a bad kid or anything, but he wasn't coming along. He wasn't getting it in certain respects, but they held on to him. I mean, you could say, well, whatever, they got Chris Versteeg. Fine. I mean, they like Chris Versteeg. But with the Forsling thing, they got a good player, a good prospect for down the road. If you're going to trade Klaas Dahlbeck, yes, it costs you a first-round pick as well, but at least do it in a deal that you get something back that you really, really need, and it's of high importance, and he did that. And I maybe look at this these past couple of months as maybe Stan Bowman turning a corner, and maybe it's just the organization. Maybe it's not just – Stan Bowman's kind of out front, and he's the guy that everybody talks about. And, again, I don't think it's fair that everybody puts all the praise or all the blame on Stan, because I don't think it's him making some of these decisions. At least alone. I mean, we know. You talked about group effort. I mean, there's a lot of different factors in why the Blackhawks do certain things and when they do them. And it's not Stan's whim. It's not his decision all the time. So I don't know how fair it is to assess or blame him about anything, because who knows? Like, for sure.
Well, that's exactly right. Who knows for sure? I think prudently, to me, I mean, it's a math problem at some point here, right? Okay. Now, either Johnny Oduya, Patrick Sharp, or Nick Leddy had to go. I had heard in the beginning of the summer that they were shopping Patrick Sharp, and they were going to look to get bigger and replace him with some size and do some different things, and all that turned out to be no go. The safest choice, if you were trying to, you know, put yourself in the best position to win this year, the safest choice was probably to keep Patrick Sharp and Johnny Oduya and trade Nick Leddy. No problem on my end. I could have seen myself doing the same thing. And that goes with whether Leddy had 15 points now or is talked about in the Norris conversation. Hindsight's 20/20. I'm saying the safest choice was to keep Oduya and Sharp. I'll stick by that. But unless there was a deal that was a hair away from being consummated in the beginning of the summer at the draft for Nick Leddy, the way he held, as it turned out, to hold him to less than a week to go before the season begins, you talk about Jeremy Morin being an asset. I don't care. You know, right away, people that are out of town stupid or people that don't really understand the game that much seem to want to always say he was no more than a number five or number six defenseman. Okay. The Hawks had the best top four defensemen since they won the Cup in 2010. I will give the Kings credit that maybe last year that wasn't the case. But still, I think if you would have pulled general managers, they would have picked the top four from the Hawks during that time. Last year, maybe from 1 through 6, you could have said the Kings. Nick Leddy not being able to play in the playoffs that much because the coach didn't trust him, and there were reasons for it. He wasn't good against the best forechecks from the teams in the later rounds. They had Michael Roosevelt that played out of his mind when they won the last Cup, and was a big reason why they did it, with playing five defensemen in the later rounds. I could see the reason right there and say, hey, listen, this kid is good enough to bring something. People see where he could go. He could be a top three defenseman on a lot of teams, and he has an upside because we don't give him enough rope. Let's get rid of him the week after the playoffs ended. But for whatever reason, that didn't happen. So I think at some point you have to basically give Stan Bowman some rope, but there's too many times where he's been backed into a corner and didn't get any value at all for players, and that can't happen. That can't continue to happen.
Now, you know, I mean, you've talked about it many times, and you know, the Nick Leddy thing. Waiting till the last possible minute. I know what Stan would say. I know what they would say, in that, like, the characterization that he's been like with this, you know, with Vermette. You know, some people were kind of appalled or you know, troubled that the Blackhawks had to give up a first round pick for Antoine Vermette along with Klaus Dahlbeck. I mean, that was the going rate. I mean, once you saw what Sequeira went to
exactly.
LA for, you
yeah.
knew what the going rate was, and Stan didn't pay a penny over it.
You know, no, and like we said, he was the best forward available. So once you saw Sequeira go for a first round pick, it wasn't a question of whether it was going to be a first round pick. It was going to be a question of, to me, it was a question if he was going to give the first round pick and a good ice hog up.
Yeah, and you know, so and I know that the Hawks would say that there's no such thing. You know, it's overplayed that GMs get their backs against the wall because, you know, what he would say or they would say to that is that no GM wants to make a lopsided deal or take advantage of another GM because when, you know, the shoe spins around and it's pointing at them, they don't want someone else to do that to them or to not pick up the phone, you know, because they're holding some sort of a grudge. You know, I get that, but I mean, you look at what happened with Nick Leddy over the summer, and again, I mean, don't you think that the Blackhawks probably as a collective group, I'll just say that, went into that situation saying, with Nick Leddy, saying, you know what, we're going to wait to see how the training camp plays out. What if Marian Hossa gets injured and he misses the first 4 months? We don't have to trade Nick Leddy. We can keep him at that point. And then when Marian Hossa comes back, maybe somebody else is injured, we can get away with carrying Nick Leddy all year long. So you think like...
If that happened, Chris, I'll be honest with you. If that was the thinking, that was the wrong thinking. You said you base your plans on a catastrophe happening, basically. I mean, that doesn't make sense. Here's what could have happened, and I'm going to cut him as much slack as I can. What could have happened is the salary cap, it was about $2 million or so than most people thought, lower. That was one thing. And then I think, you know, and I wouldn't bet against Stan Bowman really not wanting to trade Nick Leddy. I think there was a choice. Johnny Oduya had a broken foot. I don't know if that entered the calculations, though. You know, I don't think it should have. I mean, players get hurt and traded sometimes anyway. He was another one that was in a situation. Now you're going to lose him for free. I don't think that they would have really played the game. Let's hope someone gets hurt so we could keep him. I mean, they got backed into a corner from the standpoint that they couldn't take back any salary. They couldn't get a useful player that could have helped them this year. So they got what they got. I mean, Gart Snow, people laughed at him for years, should never have been a general manager. I mean, you know, he had the week of his life. And because he was there at the right opportune time, and he had the checkbook open, and he had room, and he picked up two nice players and didn't have to give a lot for them. So it's hard to move salary. I think you have to be in front of the curve. Leddy didn't have to get traded in October, in September. He could have gotten traded last year sometime. He could have gotten traded in the beginning of the summer, but for whatever reason, it didn't work out that way.
I mean, but you know that Stan Bowman's a smart guy. I mean, he's not a dumb guy. He knows that he stands to get a better deal at the draft than he does 2 days before the regular season begins. I mean, you know that he knows that. So I want to give Stan the benefit of the doubt because I really, in a way, I kind of feel bad for Stan because he's a guy that people perceive got the job because of what his last name is, got the job because his father was in the front office. There's people that feel, it's mostly people that don't know what they're talking about, but there's people that feel that Scotty's the one pulling the strings, which he's, if he was at one point, he's not anymore. You know, now we have the situation where, you know, Al MacIsaac has sort of stepped out from the shadows and now he wants to be kind of out in front and getting some attention too. So it's like Stan can't win for losing. And I just want to, like, I want to believe, and I think I have this right, that Stan just wasn't allowed to make that move. Now maybe you're
Well, maybe that could be. I mean, there's a lot of people that say there's like paralysis there because it's group decisions. I don't know if that's the case. But I'll tell you what, you don't get value waiting to 5 days before the season begins. I mean, that's a for sure. And like I said, it was a math problem. There was not only did he have to be traded, he had to be traded in essence for nothing. And I'm not saying this kid that they got, Polka, won't be a decent. He could be an all-star for all I know. But I'm talking about value to the team this year. To give away a kid that age with that much experience on a cup-winning team, a defenseman on top of it all, for really no one of use. I mean, he backed himself into a corner, and I think it didn't work in their favor that the salary cap fell short a couple million dollars. But to wait that long, I mean, I would really like to know that story before I could really let him off the hook. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that I never was one to ever say he shouldn't have got the job or he got the job because of his father. To me, that's a pile of crap. I mean, you have no control over who your parents are. You know, did he have an opportunity because his father was Scotty Bowman? Probably. But, you know, the fact is you got to do it on your own. In the same regard, his name is at the top of the heap. He is the one who will get the blame or deserves the credit, most of the credit, if they do well. He's the GM. You know, it's great to be a consultant and only get the credit. And that seems to be the position Scotty Bowman has been in for the last 15 years or so. That's a nice gig. I wish I could get one of those. And I'm not saying that he doesn't deserve it. Obviously, he has the resume to prove it. But, you know, whatever happened up there, whatever the disagreements were, they got backed into a corner. And they're not the only one that it happens to. But here, you knew once those guys were signed, this is a man who was basically had an accounting background, who knows numbers. I mean, they knew all of this. So I can't cut him any slack at all for what would happen. Unless, like I say, there was a trade consummated earlier on and it fell apart at the last minute or something like that happened. I think you have to give the blame to him, Bowman, and you also have to give him credit for some things, too, that have happened. Even if it was a group decision, it's still his call ultimately.
Moving forward, is there anything, like, obviously, you know, the trades aside, the Blackhawks' success or failure throughout, you know, as we finish up the regular season and getting into the playoffs, the Blackhawks' success or failure isn't going to depend on these moves that were made at the trade deadline. They certainly help. They certainly fill some holes and some needs. But the Blackhawks' success or failure rests, in my mind, on Duncan Keith, Patrick Sharp, and Marian Hossa. If those three players don't play to the level that's expected of them, the Hawks aren't going anywhere. And you could even if Patrick Kane was in that discussion. So to me, like, those are the three players to keep an eye on. And you know, maybe Brandon Saad to a lesser extent. You know, he's still, well, you know, luckily for him, you know, he's going to earn his contract as a guy that flies under the radar and isn't really expected to perform every night, which is going to change next year. But to me, that's where the focus should be here as we wrap up the season. Is there anything else as far as issues or guys on the roster that you're looking at as a key importance as the season winds down?
Well, I mean, you got to look at the number six guy of the defenseman too, and if that's Roosevelt, he hasn't exactly strung together a group of games you could really sink your teeth into and be proud of. I mean, there are some options, but then you go down to Trevor Van Riemsdyk with very little experience. I'm just wondering, you know, how much Teeman can play. Not playing a year, you know, coming in now when the pace is the highest. So they have three defensemen. To me, the biggest trepidation is three defensemen coming off of injury. Two of them, one hasn't played in a year. The other one, very little experience. He's going to come right back into the race when we're going at the fastest pace down the stretch. So I wonder about that. And what you said, though, there's no argument against it. I mean, I think, you know, when you go up and down this roster, there aren't too many players that you could say are better than last year, and really not too many that you could say are as good as last year. So they're going to need to get it into gear. I mean, obviously, Sharp stands out as being a guy that, you know, has just had an awful year. So we're going to have to see.
Yeah, Jonathan Toews has turned it on of late. You know, he's a guy that you don't really worry too much about, except for,
right,
you know, when he goes into those patented long stretches without goals or points, and you start to, you know, I mean, he plays, you know, the way that he plays, he's going to get tired. He's going to get banged up, and it's always in the back of your mind. But
a lot of hard minutes.
Yeah, a lot of hard minutes, and that's one. I think one of the key things about Vermette is he should be playing on that PK and taking some of those minutes away from Hossa and Toews. Obviously, you're going to want Hossa and Toews in those roles come playoff time, but against the Edmonton Oilers on a Friday night, the first week of March, I think Antoine Vermette and Joakim Nordstrom and Brandon Saad and Marcus Kruger can kill penalties. I don't see why. And if one of the issues that I have with Joel is that, you know, he coaches every night like it's the playoffs, and, you know, unless the game blows up, and then of course he backs off the throttle. But, you know, if I was him, I'd be looking at trying to pace some of those guys' minutes. And you talk about Roosevelt. What happened to Roosevelt this year? When the season started, he was injured. He came back. The idea was that they were going to pace him. That he wasn't playing every game. He was playing like every other game. He played two, played three, off one. They were pacing him. And then Van Riemsdyk got hurt. And then all of a sudden, Roosevelt's playing 18, 19, 20 minutes a night. And they wore him out. I mean, that's how I look at it. Maybe he would have worn out playoff time anyway, but, you know, he played a good game against Carolina the other night. Like I've said before, I give Roosevelt some benefit of the doubt because he played so, I thought in his role, he played so well last year, but, I mean, it's another guy. You got all these defensemen. I mean, Rundblad's terrible. Tim Erickson was the worst. That pairing, when those two play together, that was the worst pairing I've seen in a Blackhawks uniform since Jason Strudwick, Ivan Dropa. I mean, those guys are terrible. But, like, I mean, it is what it is. If they're on the roster, they're in somebody's, you know, they're somebody's project, play them. You know, it was my argument about Brandon Peary and my argument about Morin, my argument about Teravainen. And one guy playing on this team isn't the difference between a win and a loss. It's just not. If they have too much talent, they're too good on their top end, they have a great goaltender, you can pace guys, you can bring guys along, and there was no reason to push Roosevelt as hard as he did.
Well, you know, looking at this too, I mean, it's funny looking at the TT situation. He's played only five games of 13 minutes or more. So that's not top 6 minutes. So, you know, and like I say, there's question marks here. Can they dial it up and beat anyone? Yeah. You really can't discount the will of the core of this team. Toews has come around the last week, 10 days or so, but before that, you know, he disappeared for quite a while, in my opinion. And I think Hossa was hot, Toews wasn't. Sharp has never been. Seabrook was great till the holidays. Now he's been kind of spotty. Duncan Keith was good in the beginning of the year, and now he basically drifted off after that. Oduya had just a handful of games where you could say, wow, that's a Johnny Oduya. Chalmerson's been good for the most part, but is he better than last year? No. Corey Crawford, house on fire till he twisted his ankle, fell off whatever he fell off of. After that, he's been normal. He's been, you know, average. Is he better than last year? You know, maybe. I'll concede that, maybe. If you take the whole body of his work. But, You know, you go up and down that lineup. Marcus Kruger, no. Shaw, no. Saad, maybe about the same. But for the most part, you know, there hasn't been that many players that you could say, boy, they took a step forward. And, I mean, it stands to reason at some point. You know, Taves is still killing penalties. Hosa is still killing penalties. How many games have these guys played the last few years? You know, I mean, you know, the Olympics, this and that, the other. I mean, it's just at some point, you know, there's only so much gas in the tank. And the one guy who was head and shoulders above any year that he's had, who was, you know, would have been the leading scorer in the league or right there, was Kane. And it's unfortunate that he had to go down when he went down. I mean, maybe it's a blessing in disguise that he broke a bone rather than tore up his shoulder, which could be a chronic thing that would linger throughout his career, possibly, or possibly he would need an operation where he would be out a long time someday. But, you know, now the chances of breaking the same collarbone, from what I understand, or the clavicle, are no greater than it would have been if he never broke it at all. So maybe that's, you know, maybe that's the silver lining, if you could grab onto something. Could he come back and be a difference maker? Well, if he comes back at 60%, he's still better than, you know, many guys on the roster. So if he was cleared to play, I don't think they say, hey, no, we don't want to take a chance. You know, if it's the middle of the third round and they're alive and his collarbone, his clavicle is mended, I think he'll play. But, you know, you're coming back after not playing for all that time. The pace of the game, you can't get that kind of challenge in practice. So, I mean, this would be, if they could get to the Cup final, it would be a tremendous achievement. If they could win the Stanley Cup, this would far surpass any other time in recent history that they did it.
Before we go, is there any specific trade that happened before the deadline, or maybe a team, like the group of moves that they made, that stand out to you as you know, maybe the premier moves at the deadline?
I think it just showed a willingness, like LA. You know, you could see the teams that really think they're close, LA, the Ducks. I think, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, Arizona did a pretty good job of accumulating draft picks and stuff. I mean, for where they were at this year, you have to kind of applaud what they did. Outside of that, you know, I think it didn't surprise me that Dale Talon went for Jagr. I mean, he had to pay up for him, but, you know, they need to make the playoffs, and maybe he could catch lightning in the bottle a little bit, and he's, you know, maybe I'll help some of those young kids down there and add a little bit more offense. Outside of that, I mean, Detroit, I think, is a sleeper team coming out of the East. I think if somehow they could get out, you know, they could come out of the East or get an easier path to the final somehow, that could be very interesting, because not that it always holds true, many times it doesn't, but they're unbeaten against the Central. They got a tremendous record against the West. And they're kind of one of those under-the-radar teams that, you know, if they could get the goaltending and Howard could be at his best, which he hasn't been in a long time, but if he could be at his best, it'd be very interesting to see what winds up happening with them. And they're kind of a team that really no one's talking about, really.
Yeah, to me, the class of the East are in no particular order, the Rangers, the Red Wings, and Montreal. I mean, that's just the way I see it. You know, I they paid out the nose, but I liked what the Rangers did, you know, with Yandel, even Shepard. I mean, he's a marginal guy, but at least it gives him some depth at the forward position. I mean, the Rangers can skate. The best goaltender in the world will be healthy, you know, come playoff time. You know, I think they're a better team this year than they were last. Rick Nash is alive and playing well.
Well, he's really like the player I thought he was going to be a few years ago. I thought he would be just a dominant force, and he's turned out to be that this year for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only thing is, it's like getting to the finals 2 years in a row. It's tough. I mean, there's been teams that have done it, but as we know here in Chicago, and I mean, there's been various reasons why it hasn't happened. But it's a chore. So, I mean, we'll see. But I mean, those are the three teams that I like in the East, and hopefully it's not another 6 months before we do a podcast. But it's just so we get this in. I still look at the Blackhawks as the favorite in the West. You know, I expect the Blackhawks' best players, of course, injuries aside, to perform, and I do believe that there's a lot of motivation there. I don't think that they're in turmoil. I don't believe any of that stuff as far as them being in turmoil or there being problems or anything. I think that they're dialed in. I think that they're motivated. They know what's at stake. They know that this thing's about to be broken up. And I think that they get by St. Louis. I think their biggest test is if the Kings get in. I don't know how that works. I mean, that's even with Vermette down the middle, the Kings are a dangerous team. And if you let the Kings hang around, they're going to get you. And like I still look at that as the biggest obstacle in the West for the Hawks.
And like I said earlier, they're the team that's shown they could beat the Hawks in a close series for whatever reason. You know, they did it last year, and I think, I'm sorry, well, you probably weren't even finished, but
no, go ahead.
I think obviously the gap is closed. I still wouldn't go against the Hawks if they were as healthy. I mean, sure, Kane's not going to be here. But if everything else held true, I don't think you can bet against them. But I think it matters more now than ever of the matchups. And I don't know if this could shake out that way. But if somehow the Hawks don't have to play St. Louis first, and the winner of the division has to play the Kings, if there's some sort of a crossover because of the way they get in, I don't know if that's feasible. But if that were to happen, that would be very, very interesting. I mean, I think the Hawks would be better off playing Nashville. I know that they've got Pecorine. I understand that, and I said and do believe that if I had to pick one goaltender for one game, that's who I take. But I think if they could avoid St. Louis and the pounding that they would take against St. Louis and could avoid the Kings as far as possible, they got a really good chance. Because if you look at the way it's constructed, the other teams that are in here, they really don't know how to win in the playoffs. You know, they haven't really done that great recently and come to the final and went out. Now, one of these years, Anaheim could do it. You know, and I like the addition of Wisniewski there for them. One of these years, these teams that lose to the Hawks or lose in the first round or disappoint, they're going to learn how to win and move forward. But until they do it, they haven't done it, right? So I'm looking at the danger of being like you, the Kings, and trying to avoid them until the nth degree, and if possible, not play St. Louis first. If somehow they could all shake out, the Hawks' chances go way up. And for whatever it's worth, the Hawks from the beginning of the year have been the favorites to win the Stanley Cup. They're still the favorites. They're co-favorites, I think, now with Anaheim. So for whatever that's worth, maybe nothing at all. But, you know, there's people that still believe the Blackhawks are the team to reckon with when the playoffs start.
Yeah, I think the issue for L.A., and, you know, you can't say it on one hand and then not another. I mean, at some point, does all of the hockey that L.A. has played, and all the emotional hockey too, I mean, that, you know, of the 2 years ago of being down 3-0 and coming back, having to win 3-7, at some point they'll hit the wall too. But I just think that, you know, even if, let's say, and I don't want to discount Nashville because I like Nashville a lot. I think their defense right now is dramatically underrated, and in 3 years they're going to have the best defense in hockey if they stay together, maybe even 2 years from now. But I just think that when it comes down to it, their scoring really isn't proven enough for me in meaningful games. That I just I think it's two wars that the Blackhawks have to go through, but I think the Blackhawks prevail in both of those. As long as, again, as long as the key guys are healthy, we'll just default and just imagine that Kane doesn't come back to the conference final. But I still think that they can get through those and move on. Before I say goodbye to you, Al, I do want to say this because I may have to add the Monitor interview in post-production, and I might have to cut out that middle part in post-production too, because it's when the audio didn't play to start the show, I'm wondering if it's not going to play now, because I just uploaded this stuff like literally right before we started. So it may not play. But if it doesn't play, for those of you that are listening live, we still have 10 minutes left on the stream. That's why I want to end right now. It's a 10-minute interview. But if it doesn't play now, I'll add it in post-production, and it'll be up when I post it on the website. Al, thank you very much for talking to me. It's been 6 long months, but I appreciate you coming back on the show.
Yeah, don't hesitate to eliminate anything I said. God knows there's stuff that could be eliminated. So you have a good night, Chris, and I'll let you go.
All right, Al. Sirius XM Radio. You get it in your car. You get it online. You can get it on your phone, SiriusXMRadio.com, the NHL channel. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I will make it my point to, in a few weeks or two, whatever it is, I think it's 2 weeks, but 2.5 weeks away, to do a show where we don't spend the whole hour on it, but we'll talk at length about Tim Sassone and my personal, I had a little bit of a dealing with Tim Sassone that I'd like to talk about too. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for sticking with us. 168 people listened to the show the other day. We haven't done a show in 6 months, and we had 168 downloads on March 2nd. I don't know what that's all about, but thank you very much for being loyal. We'll talk to everybody again after a while. Thanks, everybody. And it's going to play. Here we go. Steve Montador, this is April 2nd, 2013, post-game in Rockford. Monitor had just been put on waivers earlier by the Blackhawks, and this is going to be it. Thanks, everybody.
All right, so now you're like 8 games or whatever into it. How's it going for you so far?
I think every game's been much better. First few games were certainly very rusty, and I'm still getting my game back, but at the same time, I feel confident again, and I feel like a lot of it is back, and I'm having fun, and still grateful to be playing. I think overall it's been pretty good.
How's the AHL game been for you down here? Like the pace of it, how much, did it take you time to adapt to it at all?
I think just playing anywhere, there would be a bit of an adaptation because it'd been so long since I played. So any league I would have played in, there would have been, that bit of time. The pace is quick. Obviously, there's some young, good guys. It's a younger league overall compared to when I first played. So there's a little, pizzazz, I guess, with some teams. And, I don't know if guys really realize that they are just one step away, from the NHL. And a lot of guys do know that and play that way. And so it's a little bit different from the NHL. The NHL is a little bit faster, a little bit, top end, more skilled. But at the same time, there's some eagerness down here, and the guys play pretty hard. So it's been a good spot for me so far.
Do you find yourself like naturally trying to, just because you're a veteran guy, just trying to help other guys out?
There's some simple things that I think guys don't really realize that I certainly didn't realize at their age. I mean, some of these guys are 20, 21. I mean, it's, it makes me feel younger, just kind of hanging around with them. But also, there's some things that they just don't know because, they're just learning, and that's part of the process of being in the minors. There's some simple things that, playing simple. I mean, most of the guys that are here likely were mostly offensive or counted on as offensive in junior and whatnot, and they might not play that role here. And, that's an adaptation for those guys that they're going to have to learn to play a different way. And so, a tight game like today, it's not trying to go one-on-one or one-on-two. You got to get the puck deep and just play it simple, where that was maybe not something that guys did, if they came from junior or other places they might have played. So, yeah, I try and lend an ear, but I certainly don't want to be, badgering anyone's ear either.
Talk about this guy right here, the guy you're partnered with.
Klaus? Yeah. Swedish Klaus Hamani?
Like, how, you know, you've been paired with him the whole time. How you know, big stay-at-home defenseman, it gives you freedom to kind of jump up into the play.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, he does have a good shot, and he does see the ice pretty well. It's been a real easy fit. You know, he's a pretty quiet guy, just in general, but a super guy. So I think the biggest key for us is just to keep communicating on the ice. And we're developing a fun relationship off the ice, which I think is helping that. But, yeah, I mean, I feel with, you know, getting back in shape and trying to be offensive, I know that he's always going to be back there. And, you know, he's solid in front of the net and solid with the puck and all the little things. And he's good at that for a guy his age. And as a defenseman, that's you know, I'd say he's wise beyond his years, and so it's been a pleasure to be playing with him.
For you, kind of a few things here. Are you commuting from Chicago?
Or, sometimes.
So, or are you staying here sometimes and
yep.
splitting it up? Okay, so it's not that, you know, bad for you as far as getting to practices and everything?
Yeah, I know. I don't mind the drive. Yeah. You know, leave early and, you know, it's get some quiet time and you know, make some phone calls or whatever.
That's what I do.
Yeah, it's all good.
Jenner, you know, were there any guys, you know, when you were a kid coming up, any guys that inspired you to, you know, push forward and become an NHL player?
While I was in pro or even before?
Even before, like even when you were a kid. Like, who were your inspirations?
Steve Yzerman was my favorite player. I played a lot of forward when I was a kid. And being a right shot, first name Steve, I mean, it was natural. And I grew up in Toronto where everyone was Leaf fans, and I was a Red Wing fan. So, yeah, so Steve Yzerman was somebody that I looked up to. And then as I played, you know, pro, I was really inspired by a guy named Daryl Scoville, who was my D partner in St. John my first year pro. Solid, smooth defenseman, played really well. And another guy I looked up to was Derek Morris. He came down on a conditioning stint my first year, I believe it was. And, you know, super nice guy and a right shot and very skilled and poised with the puck. And I felt that I could learn a lot from him just by watching him play. And I still do when I still see him play. And he's still, you know, he's one of those guys that he's not the flashiest guy, but he's had a great career just by doing the simple things. You know, as while being a skilled guy, but at the same time, you know, battles hard and plays solid defense. So, you know, as far as players, those are the, you know, big influences.
Anybody, like a coach or somebody that stands out to you that really helped you along in your development?
Jim Playfair, my first year pro. We didn't really like each other. We'd probably both admit that. But at the same time, respected each other, and we've actually grown to become good friends. He made me, you know, the little things about defense and you know, being the right teammate and how to be a pro and working and showing up every day. You know, he was really hard on us, but at the same time, it definitely made me a better player. And, you know, I've always shared that if anyone's asked me that. And, you know, I still friends with him. And then, you know, beyond that, once I got to pro, Daryl Sutter was similar. You know, they both cared about the players as if they were their own family, but at the same time demanded a lot. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for both those guys.
Joel Quenneville, to maybe compare, because it seems like the guys that helped you the most were the guys that pushed you to be, you know, to be maybe a better player than you were at the time.
Yeah, I mean, I came in as an undrafted guy and just had to do some things that, you know, just to kind of get noticed. I fought a lot or fought more than, you know, maybe my skill levels fighting would probably warrant it. But I knew I could play. I mean, I'd always been a pretty good player on every team that I played on. Never like the top player, but always a good player. And I feel like that's still similar, you know, when I made it to the NHL and played pro. And for me, you know, I wanted to play in the NHL growing up. I think we all had that feeling, but at the same time, every team that I got on, I just wanted to be better on the team. So if I was, you know, the fifth or sixth defenseman, I wanted to be the third and fourth. Or, you know, if I was the third and fourth, I wanted to be the first and second. And that's kind of how I've approached every season, as opposed to thinking too far ahead. And, you know, last year signing a four-year contract, longest contract I've ever had, and stability and all of that. It was actually pretty overwhelming that I didn't realize until later on that, you know, it felt like, okay, I'm going to be here for a while. And while as comforting as that is, and that's all what we desire for, it's not something I've ever had before. I've moved around a lot and played on a lot of teams. And something that caught me off guard, that, you know, I realized in the summer, this past summer, that was something that, you know, was a factor in, you know, me not having a great season. I'll just call it what it is.
Is that personal pressure that you put on yourself, maybe? Or
yeah, for sure. I you know, I think I tried to prove to everybody that I was worth, you know, the contract and just the 4 years and all of the BS that's outside of just playing. And that's what I've realized now is I'm coming back playing, and I'm just going to play and play and have fun and contribute as best I can and keep learning and growing that way. And not feeling like I have to prove anything to anyone because, you know, we don't. And just because it's a distraction to be thinking that way.
A couple more. Do you think the injuries will change the way that you play?
A little bit, but, you know, at the same time, I'm not going to be hesitant to be battling and whatnot. If I think if I was like that, I wouldn't even play. Certainly been, you know, kind of feeling it out a little bit here so far. But at the same time, you know, when I got to be physical, I'll be physical. And if things happen, you know, or you mix it up, then, you know, I won't be afraid to do that if that's the situation. I don't feel I'm at risk because if I felt I was at serious risk, I wouldn't be doing this.
It seemed like a couple times tonight you were getting into Winchester and your teammates sort of jumped in there to, you know, maybe they, you know, try to help you out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, and that's appreciative, and I would do it for those guys too. I mean, anyone that's my teammates, my brother, and I, like I said, I do appreciate that. But at the same time, you know, at least I'm not going to shy away, you know, if the situation calls for it. You know, I certainly don't want to sacrifice myself in a detrimental situation. But at the same time, the game's got to be played. And in the moment, and you just do what you do.
Obviously, you were placed on waivers today.
Yep.
What's kind of your thoughts on that?
Well, it's an opportunity for another team to pick me up. You know, Stan was great about it. Just said that, you know, at the moment, you know, guys are going well in Chicago, and I understand that, and it's a business thing. So, and if I don't get picked up, that, you know, I'll be, you know, depth for them and play here in the meantime, as far as I understand it. And I know I'm NHL ready now, so, you know, hopefully I do get a chance to play, and if not, you know, play for the Hawks, you know, when the opportunity arises.
Is it a case where, I know we've talked about last season, is it a kind of unfinished business for you in Chicago?
Well, I certainly love it in Chicago, and I love the Hawks, and I love the team, and I love everything about it. But at the same time, I don't have anything to prove, like I mentioned before. But at the same time, I'd love to win in Chicago. I mean, it's a great city. The fans are great. Everything is just great about the city, you know, and the organization and the team. And I love the guys on the team, too. You know, made a lot of great friendships that I'll keep no matter what happens. So, yeah, unfinished business. I think you can almost say that every single year when you don't win. Yeah. And at the same time, you know, continue to improve. So, you know, when the opportunity arises, I'll be ready.
So did you ask, or your agent asked for the waiver? Or
nope. But
part of the process?
Yeah. No, we didn't really talk about it. It was just mentioned that it was probably going to come up, and it came up, and, you know, c'est la vie.
Song to give, what kind of life would you live if you had a life to live? Would you want to make something good that you can look on, give you lots of pleasure? Yeah, you would. What about this thing that you gave? What if it weren't quite perfect?
What if there was something bad about it?
Would you love it just the same? Would you still care about it? The lights on the city look so good, almost like somebody thought they sing. If you had a song to sing, what kind of life would you live? If you had a life to live, would you want to make something
that you could look on, give you lots of pleasure, yeah, you would. The lights on the city look so good, almost like somebody perfect.
What if there was something bad about it?
Would you love it just the same? Would you still care?